Well, today I want to present on Bikurim, which means first fruits, Chag Shavuot, Feast of Weeks, and Pentecost, the Greek term that we've taken in English to use as it's spoken in Greek. And specifically, we want to talk about Moses' seven Sabbaths count from the wave of the sheaf offering, the Omer HaTenupah, of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Today is first fruits, or Bikurim in Leviticus 23:17, referring to the two leavened loaves offered unto Yahweh. This day is called the Feast of Weeks, Chag Shavuot, in Exodus 34:22 and in Deuteronomy 16:9-10. This day is also referred to as Pentecost in Acts 2, verse 1 and Acts 20, verse 16, as well as in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 8. On the same day of the Hebrew calendar, the law of Yahweh and the Spirit of Yahweh was given to the Israelites 1,500 years apart. My mind turns to that seven-week trek, counting of seven weekly Sabbaths from the Sunday, the morrow, following the Sabbath within the Feast of Unleavened Bread, in which Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt to Mount Sinai, where on his first trek up the mountain, Moses received the commandments and the evangel of Yahweh by way of his son, Yahshua Messiah, no less, who 15 centuries later sent the Spirit of Yahweh to his disciples so that they could take the commandments and the evangel given at Mount Sinai to the world. Let's examine the details of these amazing events, and we'll begin with the last of the 10 plagues Yahweh imposed or unleashed upon Egypt, killing all of the firstborn of Egypt in order to force Pharaoh to let the Israelites leave Egypt. So let's turn to Exodus 12, verses 31 and 32 to begin with. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go, worship Yahweh as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said and go on. And also bless me." Interesting, those last words there. Even in defeat, Pharaoh wants credit for allowing Israel to leave Egypt. I also notice, according to what's posted here in Scripture, in the Hebrew, Pharaoh actually uses the name of Yahweh. Would that everyone would use his name when worshiping and when speaking of all the amazing things that he has done. Verses 33 and 34 of Exodus 12. The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise, they said, we will all die. So the people took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs wrapped in clothing. Verses 35 to 36. The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing. Yahweh had made the Egyptians favorably disposed toward the people, and they gave them what they asked for, so they plundered the Egyptians. 37:39. The Israelites journeyed from Ramesses to Sukkot. There were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. So that would, if there's like three children in the family, there's somewhere 3 million people on the road. Verse 38, many other people went up with them, spoken of as a mixed multitude in other versions, as well as large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. With the dough they had brought from Egypt, they baked cakes of unleavened bread. The dough was without yeast because they had been driven out of Egypt and did not have have time to prepare food for themselves. This next slide is the traditional map of the Exodus, upon which several Mount Sinai explorers note the question marks on the map itself, demonstrating a real lack of knowledge of the people who put this map together about where these cities were. Notice, if you can, Mount Sinai with a question mark at the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula. I know it may be difficult to read, but other cities like Rephidim and Elim, Marah, they all have question marks after them, not really understanding, or perhaps trying to make a case for Mount Sinai being at the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, as the wife of Roman Emperor Constantine determined the site to be the place of Mount Sinai. And she had a monastery built there. And this next slide is a satellite map of the Exodus, which I created using many different resources. And using Google Earth, I measured the distance from Ramesses to a possible site for Sukkot, which is number one on the map there, about midway of the Sinai Peninsula, to be somewhere between 120 and 140 miles. Now, not as a straight line as I have indicated here, but I used a kind of wandering path that went east and then along the coast to a point indicated by number one there. From my experience as a scout, I think this was possible to do in 6 days. I remember we lived 20 miles from Disneyland in Santa Ana, and one of our hikes was, you know, the incentive of walking to Disneyland 20 miles. I know this was not a paved path that the Israelites took, but still, we had enough time to spend most of the day at Disneyland. So it was a 20-mile trek by a bunch of teenagers and young kids. In 6 days, we would have made it to Disneyland if we had to take that much time. If it was 120 miles, we would have done it, I'm sure. Nevertheless, as you can see on this map, the distance from Ramesses to number one was about twice as long as the distance from one to two, and then half again from two to three, and then half again from three to four. They apparently were getting weaker, or maybe the path was being more narrow and they had to take their time in moving, but their path diminished as they traveled. Each leg of this trek would end at the time of a much-needed Shabbat, making camp and preparing for the next jaunt, going from Sukkot to Etam to Marah to Elim to the wilderness of Tzin to Rephidim and finally to Mount Sinai, or Jabal al-Laws. And here is a angled view of the Red Sea crossing. Now, top left, small white circle, is that beachhead where they found themselves confronted with the sea, with the Egyptians coming after them from behind. And also on the right, in the large circle, the Mount Sinai, courtesy again of Google Earth, which shows the beachhead site, now known as Nuweiba Beach, on the east coast of the Sinai Peninsula, facing Arabia across the Red Sea, now known as the Gulf of Aqaba, where Moses led the Israelites across the Red Sea and then traveled south, then east, then north through the dry riverbeds to Jabal al-Laws, Mount Sinai. And interesting, this I captured this view, but it was amazing to be able to circle around and look at the mountain there and even imagine where the Israelites camped out. Okay, well, going back to the book of Exodus 12, verses 40 to 42. Now, the length of time the Israelite people lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all Yahweh's divisions left Egypt. Because Yahweh kept vigil that night, which was Passover, to bring them out of Egypt, on this night, all the Israelites are to keep vigil to honor Yahweh for the generations to come. Verses 43 to 47. Yahweh said to Moses and Aaron, "These are the regulations for the Passover. No foreigner is to eat of it. Any slave you have brought may eat of it after you have circumcised him, but a temporary resident and a hired worker may not eat of it. It must be eaten inside one house. Take none of the meat outside the house. Do not break any of the bones. The whole community of Israel must celebrate it." And notice that Yahweh is telling them way beforehand. Now, there are no houses at this time. They were in the middle of the desert. They're walking. They are wanderers. Verses 48 to 51. "An alien living among you who wants to celebrate Yahweh's Passover must have all the males in his household circumcised. Then he may take part like one born in the land. No uncircumcised male may eat of it. The same law applies to native-born and to the alien living among you." All the Israelites did just what Yahweh had commanded Moses and Aaron. And on that very day, Yahweh brought the Israelites out of Egypt by their divisions. It is clear that the children of Israel did not travel on the Sabbath. They camped and rested. The question is, does the scripture describe these seven Sabbath encampments? Let's look at the text and see. The first Sabbath was at Sukkot, which was at the time called Baal Zephon. And verses 3 and 4 of Exodus 13. "Then Moses said to the people, 'Commemorate this day, the day you came out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, because Yahweh brought you out of it with a mighty hand. Eat nothing containing yeast. Today, in the month of Abib, you are leaving.'" Period. And 5 and 6, "When Yahweh brings you into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Hivites, and Jebusites, the land he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you are to observe this ceremony in this month. For 7 days, eat bread made without yeast, and on the seventh day, hold a feast to Yahweh." Of course, this is describing the feast of unleavened bread, in which the first day and the last day are high Sabbaths. Verses 7 and 8. "Eat unleavened bread during these 7 days. Nothing with yeast in it is to be seen among you, nor shall any yeast be seen anywhere within your borders. On that day, tell your son, 'I do this because of what Yahweh did for me when I came out of Egypt.'" 9 and 10. "This observance will be for you like a sign on your hand and a reminder on your forehead that the law of Yahweh is to be on your lips. For Yahweh brought you out of Egypt with his mighty hand. You must keep this ordinance at the appointed time, year after year." Verse 19. "Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, because Joseph had made the sons of Israel swear an oath. He had said, 'Elohim will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place.'" The second Sabbath was at the wilderness of Etham. And on this map, you can see that they're camped basically at that beach site. And you'll see what they did before the Egyptians caught up with them. In verses 20 and 22, we read, "After leaving Sukkot, they camped at Etam on the edge of the desert." Of course, this would require about a six-day journey to accomplish this. "By day, Yahweh went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night, in a pillar of fire to give them light so that they could travel by day or night." And I'm guessing day and night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. And then Exodus 14, beginning with verses from 1 to 4. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdol, which means towers, and the sea. They are to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh." And so the Israelites did this. And as I read that verse, I think of the fact that Yahweh puts leaders in place. He puts leaders in place either to reward the people or to punish them. He put Pharaoh in place so that his name, Yahweh, would be known to those who stand against him. And I firmly believe that the presidents that we have and the ones we're going to be going to have for our nation are going to be put there by Yahweh. And we can see the results of the different presidents that we've had and know that either the people have been honorable to Yahweh or dishonorable. And for me, it looks like, that's just my perception, that many more people are turning away from Yahweh. And so I have a pretty pessimistic view of what's coming ahead. I do pray that there will be many who will stand up for Yahweh so that we might have good leaders who also are willing to follow the way of the Messiah. Verses 5 through 7. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services." Now, if you were a company and you lost 3 million people or 150,000, I guess I'd be worried too. Verse 6, so he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. Verses 8 and 9. Yahweh hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi-Hahiroth, meaning the mouth of the gorges, implying the means of blowing and having a root, meaning two-edged, opposite Baal Zephon. Now, Zephon, the Baal of Typhon, is the name of a destroyer. It means cool or a babbler, but it's where we get the word typhoon from. And it was the wind of Yahweh that opened up the path through the Red Sea that allowed them to escape the Egyptians. Verses 10 to 12. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to Yahweh. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Now, do you think that these were the Israelites, the faithful Israelites who were saying this, or was the mixed multitude that was following along with them? Yeah. Verses 13 and 14. Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance Yahweh will bring to you today." Hallelujah. "The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. Yahweh will fight for you. You need only to be still." 15 through 18. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. Verses 19 and 20. Then the angel of Elohim, who is that? That's Yahshua, Messiah, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side and light to the other side, so neither went near the other all night long. 21:22. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night Yahweh drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on the right and on their left. 23 and 25. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, Yahweh looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He made the wheels of their chariots come off so that they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites." Duh. Yahweh is fighting for them against Egypt. Verses 26 to 28. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and Yahweh swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. 29 to 31. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day Yahweh saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power Yahweh displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared Yahweh and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. Would that that may have continued. The third Sabbath, another 6 days' journey after a Sabbath rest, was at Marah, which means bitter water, in the wilderness of Shur. You can see number three there. After they crossed and traveled down south a ways, they camped at Marah. Verses 22 to 24 in chapter 15 of Exodus. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For there, for 3 days, they traveled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was bitter. That is why the place is called Marah. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What are we to drink?" Verses 25 and 26. Then Moses cried out to Yahweh, and Yahweh showed him a piece of wood. He threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. There Yahweh made a decree and a law for them, and there he tested them. He said, "If you listen carefully to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim and do what is right in his eyes, if you pay attention to his commands and keep all his decrees, I will not bring on you any of the diseases I brought on the Egyptians, for I am Yahweh who heals you." I think that there is an allusion here in this piece of wood thrown into the waters. Waters, typically in a prophetic sense, means the people. And the wood might possibly refer to the stake upon which the Messiah died, bringing sweetness to the world. I mean, that was his command to his disciples, to go specifically to the house of Israel, the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So here we are in this land, the waters of Merak, not palatable to Yahweh, at least. And here we are worshiping the Father and walking in the ways of the Son. The wood has been cast into the waters, making it sweet again. Exodus 15, verse 27. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs and 70 palm trees, and they camped there near the water. This was the fourth Sabbath at Elim, the 15th day of the second month, as it says in the verse. So Exodus 16, verses 1 and 2. And they journeyed from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Tzin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. So if it's the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt, how many weeks have they been traveling? 4 weeks. Onward, Israel. 6 more days to the next day of rest, which is the fifth Sabbath in the wilderness of Tzin, where they received the bread from heaven. Exodus 16, verses 1 through 3. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Tzin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by Yahweh's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." Testing Yahweh here. Exodus 16, verses 4 and 5. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days." Now, moving down to verse 9 of chapter 16, 9 through 12. Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, come before Yahweh, for he has heard your grumbling." While Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked toward the desert, and there was the glory of Yahweh appearing in the cloud. Yahweh said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am Yahweh, your Elohim." And I think that word meat there, well, okay, next verse, 13 to 16. Rather than guessing or speaking ahead what it is. That evening, quail came and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What is it?" In Hebrew, what it is manna. So they're saying, "Manna, what is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread Yahweh has given you to eat. This is what Yahweh has commanded. Each one is to gather as much as he needs. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent." Now moving down to verse 21 through 23. Each morning everyone gathered as much as he needed, and when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, 2 omers for each person, and the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, "This is what Yahweh commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of rest, a holy Sabbath to Yahweh." Now, notice that the law of Yahweh was in effect prior to the 10 commandments written in stone given to Israel at Mount Sinai. And it goes on, "So bake what you want to bake, and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it until morning." verses 24 to 26. So they saved it until morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink or get maggots in it. Eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to Yahweh. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you are to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. And they then moved on to the sixth day of rest, 6 days of travel, to Rephidim, which means no water. Exodus 17, verses 1 and 2. The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as Yahweh commanded. They camped at Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses replied, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put Yahweh to the test?" Verses 3 and 4. But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?" Then Moses cried out to Yahweh, "What am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." Verses 5 through 7. Yahweh answered Moses, "Walk on ahead of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff which you struck the Nile, and go. I will stand there before you on the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink." So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel, and he called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested Yahweh, saying, "Is Yahweh among us or not?" Verses 8 and 9. The Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some of our men and go out to fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of Elohim in my hands." Verses 10 through 13. So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. As long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning, but whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. Verses 14 through 16. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Write this on a scroll as something to be remembered, and make sure that Joshua hears it, because I will completely blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven." Moses built an altar and called it Yahweh is my banner, Yahweh Nisi. Verse 16, he said, "For hands were lifted up to the throne of Yahweh. Yahweh will be at war against the Amalekites from generation to generation." This is, when I read this verse, I think of Joshua saying, "You've heard it said that you shall love your family and hate your enemy." Is that what he said? But he said to love your enemy, which was not a contradiction, but that's a whole other story. The seventh day, the seventh Sabbath at Mount Sinai, they actually arrived before the Sabbath, of course. Exodus 18, verse 5, "And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness, where he was encamped at the mountain of Elohim." 13, 14, "The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. And when his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, 'What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, while all these people stand around you from morning till evening?'" Verses 15 and 16. "Moses answered him, 'Because the people come to me to seek Elohim's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of Elohim's decrees and laws.'" Wouldn't it be nice if we had a judge who could do that today? Someone who is impartial? I wonder what our jails and prisons would look like And I wonder what the punishment that would be handed out. Kind of scares me a bit about what happened, what we'd see in this land. But that is certainly going to be the way it will be in the kingdom when Yahshua will rule, and he'll rule by the law of Yahweh. He will be the righteous judge. And as Moses, we see later, chooses people to be judges, sub-judges, except for extremely difficult cases. We will be doing that if we are in the kingdom, as you know, as having been risen from the first resurrection. We will be judges and priests performing the works for Yahweh and his Son. Verses 17 through 19. Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may Elohim be with you. You must be the people's representative before Elohim and bring their disputes to him." Verses 20 to 21, "Teach them the decrees and laws and show them the way to live and the duties they are to perform. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear Elohim, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens." Verses 20 to 23, "Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. The simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter, because they will share it with you. If you do this and Elohim so commands, you will be able to stand the strain, and all these people will go home satisfied." I like that he's making a suggestion and leaving the decision up to Yahweh. Verses 24 to 26 of Exodus 18. Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Moving on to Exodus chapter 19, verses 1 and 2. In the third month, after the Israelites left Egypt, on the very day, they came to the desert of Sinai. After they set out from Rephidim, they entered the desert of Sinai, and Israel camped there in the desert in front of the mountain. Okay, Israel left on the 15th of the first month, traveling 2 weeks in that month. They traveled 4 weeks in the second month, and on the first day of the third month, they camped at the base of Mount Sinai, the seventh week. Exodus 19, verses 3 and 4. "Then Moses went up to Elohim, and Yahweh called to him from the mountain and said, 'This is what you are to say to the house of Jacob, and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself.'" Verses 5 through 7. "Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations, you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole world is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites." So Moses went back and summoned the elders of the people and set before them all the words of Yahweh had communicated him to speak. Verses 8 and 9. "The people all responded together, 'We will do everything Yahweh has said.' So Moses brought their answer back to Yahweh. Yahweh said to Moses, 'I am going to come to you in a dense cloud so that the people will hear me speaking with you and will always put their trust in you.' Then Moses told Yahweh what the people had said." Verses 10 and 11. "And Yahweh said to Moses, 'Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day. Because on that day, Yahweh will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people.'" Recall that he said they would be in a cloud, so they will not actually see him, but they certainly will hear him. verses 12 and 13, put limits for the people around the mountain and tell them, be careful that you do not go up the mountain or touch the foot of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. He shall surely be stoned or shot with arrows. Not a hand is to be laid on him. Whether man or animal, he shall not be permitted to live. Only when the ram's horn sounds a long blast may they go up to the mountain. 14 and 15. After Moses had gone down the mountain to the people, he consecrated them, and they washed their clothes. Then he said to the people, prepare yourselves for the third day. Abstain from sexual relations. Verses 16 and 17. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning, with a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with Elohim, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Verses 18 and 19. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because Yahweh descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace. The whole mountain trembled violently, and the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder. Then Moses spoke the voice of Elohim. And the voice of Elohim answered him. 20 to 22. Yahweh descended to the top of Mount Sinai and called Moses to the top of the mountain. So Moses went up, and Yahweh said to him, go down and warn the people so that they do not force their way through to see Yahweh and many of them perish. Even the priests who approach Yahweh must consecrate themselves, or Yahweh will break out against them. 23 to 25. Moses said to Yahweh, the people cannot come up Mount Sinai because you yourself warned us, put limits around the mountain and set it apart as holy. Yahweh replied, go down and bring Aaron up with you, but the priests and the people must not force their way through to come up to Yahweh, or he will break out against them. So Moses went down to the people and told them. Exodus 20, verses 2 through 11. We should all know these, but I'm going to read that really as quickly as I can. I am Yahweh Elohecha, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. For I, Yahweh Elohecha, am a jealous El, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands of generations, to those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not ruin the name of Yahweh Elohecha, for Yahweh will not hold him guiltless who brings his name to ruin. Remember the Sabbath day. The word remember means to act and speak in behalf of. So this should read, speak and act in behalf of the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh Elohecha. Elohecha means your Elohim, as we typically speak it. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days Yahweh made the heavens and the earth and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Now notice that I've underlined a particular section of this, which speaks of creation. For in 6 days Yahweh made the heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, as a reason to keep the Sabbath day. He is the creator, therefore keep the Sabbath day. In the same section reads differently in Deuteronomy's version of the Ten Commandments. It speaks of redemption, not creation. Going to Deuteronomy 5, verse 12, let's read that section. It says, observe, which is a different Hebrew word, and I'm forgetting what that word is, but it means remember. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. as Yahweh your Elohim, Yahweh Elohecha, commanded you. And remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and Yahweh your Elohim brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, Yahweh your Elohim commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Why should we keep the Sabbath day? Because of redemption. I'm always amazed at how Yahweh put creation and redemption in the commandment to keep his day of rest, HaShabbat, holy. Truly, he and his son, Yahshua Messiah, are the Aleph and the Tau, the beginning and the end, and the first and the last. Going back to Exodus chapter 20, verses 12 through 17, to complete the Ten Commandments, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which Yahweh Elohecha is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. And following the Ten Commandments, we read in verses 18 through 19, when the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, speak to us yourself and we will listen, but do not have Elohim speak to us or we will die. Now, as I'm reading this, I'm wondering, did they hear all the Ten Commandments in this phrase here? I imagine they may have. I remember an argument we had with someone. did Israel hear the commandments? And I think that our study on that day, which was like 15 years ago, held that basically they heard the law. They later pledged to keep all that Yahweh had said. Exodus 20, verses 20 and 21. Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Ha Elohim, the Mighty One, has come to test you so that the fear of Elohim will be with you to keep you from sinning. The people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where Ha Elohim was. Verses 22 to 23. Then Yahweh said to Moses, tell the Israelites this. You have seen for yourselves that I have spoken to you from heaven. Do not make any gods to be alongside me. Do not make for yourself gods of silver or gods of gold. 24 to 26. Make an altar of earth for me and sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, your sheep and goats and your cattle. Wherever I cause my name to be honored, I will come to you and bless you. I say to that, hallelujah. Here's where he has put his name. We are Yahweh's assembly. Verse 25, if you make an altar of stones for me, do not build it with dressed stones, for you will defile it if you use a tool on it. And do not go up to my altar on steps, lest your nakedness be exposed on it. So, in all that we've read today, what is the lesson? That we are still in a wilderness, struggling to understand Yahweh and his ways, struggling to understand the barriers, the hurdles, and the stumbling blocks that Yahweh has set before us, that we may be tested and strengthened in doing so, that Yahweh will save us as long as we obey his word. Is there yet another Exodus coming? I think the answer to all of these questions is a simple yes. So may Yahweh go before us, and may he be our rear guard as we travel through this land, strangers and wanderers, until his Messiah returns. Hallelujah.